Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Folks, fantastic time here, heading into the throes of summer. It's all getting very good and very busy. And when I say busy, well, one of my larger law firms that currently has, I think they have six offices now, they are going to be expanding two of the offices, and they're going to be opening a brand new office. And all of this expansion means that they are probably going to add probably 25 to 30 employees in the next 30 to 60 days. So that is going to be a fun summer for me. I am looking forward to the business and the new computer sales and setups that we'll be doing. But oh, it's going to be so much fun trying to basically work with them over getting the cabling installed and making sure they put in everything that needs to be put in and, you know, all that kind of stuff that comes with expansions and moves. I have another company that is also moving. They've got about 25 employees. They think that their space will be done in about 60 days. So that should be happening soon. I have yet another company that, while they will not be moving anytime soon, they are going to be building a brand new building. And all of the planning for that starts here in about 30 days. So we're going to have fun planning for that new building. And it's going to house several different entities. So we're going to have to do some VLANs and some physical segments and all of that stuff. So that should be fun. And those are the things that we can plan for. The things you can't plan for are customers calling first thing on a Monday morning, begging for immediate assistance, only to find out that the week before, when they should have called you, they decided to fix things on their own. So this particular customer had a blue screen, and they just assumed that the world had ended, the sky was falling, and rather than call us for help, they would try to fix it themselves. After who knows how many hours, they only came across an option to restore the computer to factory defaults. So they did that, then tried to reinstall all their line of business software, only to realize they were stuck at that point, and they called first thing Monday morning, begging me to come out right away and take care of them because they were dead in the water. You know what? I sympathize with them. They're not on one of the managed plans. I was already busy, so I may see them tomorrow. So that's where we're at. But I digress. I have a great show for you tonight. Don't really have any stories or anything. I have a great interview coming up with Bradley Gross, the founder and president of the Law Office of Bradley Gross, PA. Bradley is a world-renowned expert in the information technology field. His law firm specializes in transactions involving MSPs, VARs, OEMs, solution resellers, cloud providers, IT professionals, you name it. He has pretty much done it in his 30 years of experience in our industry. So Brad lives here in my backyard, and I have seen him out and about on the circuit. He's been speaking at a lot of ASCII events. His session this year at the 2018 circuit for ASCII, how MSPs can avoid legal disasters that will drain their company. That was a great session at the ASCII event, and some listeners actually brought it to my attention that I should have him on a podcast. And since I work with Bradley, I thought that might be easily arranged. So, folks, I've got him here for the interview, and we are going to get right to it. So sit back and enjoy, and we will get to it right after this message from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Stephanie with AppRiver. Think of your email as a postcard. Now consider all the places where it might be seen on the way to its final destination. Would you really want social security numbers, account information, or healthcare information on a postcard? The threat to our privacy is real, and that's why you need a layered security solution that allows you to send confidential messages with confidence. One important layer is TLS. If you're an AppRiver customer, you can take comfort in knowing we will always use a TLS connection if it's available. The problem is, TLS isn't always available, and it doesn't necessarily protect your message when it reaches the server. For that, we recommend CipherPost Pro, true mailbox-to-mailbox encryption from AppRiver. With CipherPost Pro, you get an Outlook plugin, so all your team really has to remember is to click Send Secure. It's that simple. A patented delivery slip shows you when your message was received, who opened it, and what they did with it afterwards. We even make it easy for you on the go. All CipherPost Pro features are available on your mobile device, so you can send and receive encrypted email, track the messages, and open secure attachments from anywhere. Try it free for 30 days, and you can decide if CipherPost Pro is the right security solution for your business. Give us a call today. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, as I mentioned, with our special guest today, Mr. Bradley Gross. Bradley, good to see you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you're wondering about the sound quality, well, Bradley and I are actually in the same office. Bradley lives here in South Florida. So
that's right. We're right here, face to face.
Yes.
I can't run. I can't hide.
Yep. So for those of you that do not know, Bradley Gross is an attorney that specializes in technology. For the most part, if you have been to some of the ASCII Success Summits that have been going on this year, the ASCII World Tour, if you have heard anything to do with something called Master Service Agreement, Statement of Work, you've probably heard of Bradley Gross. And of course, I use Bradley Gross, so I am here today to talk to him. We also ripped apart some of my agreements that I had put in place. So,
at least you're laughing about it.
Yes.
It's fine.
So Bradley, why don't we start with first, let's just go back and do a little history, who you are, how you got started doing this.
Sure. So I started out as a small computer hacker. At the age of 10, I started programming on a TRS-80 Model 1 Level 2. And used that and my Commodore 64 in later years to hack into BBSs, as they were called back then. And I turned my little life of crime into something good. Refocused my efforts, became a prosecutor out of law school, and started the Internet and Computer Crime Division of the State Attorney's Office here in Miami-Dade County. Trained FBI and Secret Service in the investigation and prosecution of computer crime. And that was really how I started my career. It naturally led, it evolved into representing technology companies of all kinds. And starting in about 2003 or so, so we're going back about 15, 16 years now, I started representing service providers.
Okay.
Which back then were called ASPs, then they became XSPs, and now they are MSPs, MSSPs, and so forth. At the end of the day, they're all service providers, and I've been working with them globally for at least 15 or 16 years.
Okay. And it's not just the agreements you do. You do a ton of other stuff. You'll help with mergers and acquisitions. You do website audits, vendor agreements. It sounds
Absolutely.
Like a full service firm here.
Right. That's what we do. So we have a firm that is staffed with people who are not just knowledgeable about technology. Many of them are programmers themselves. My right-hand person, my right-hand paralegal, is a computer scientist himself. We provide turnkey services to technology companies, and that means OEMs and VARs and MSPs and media companies and publishing companies, really giving them all the services that they need. But the value that we bring is that we understand their business,
right?
Not just from a business perspective, but from a technology perspective as well. So we work very efficiently.
Well, that's one of the things that I liked, not only when I heard you speak, when we would talk about setting up my stuff, it was not just that you knew about the business, you actually understood it to the point where not only have you heard the stories, you live some of the stories. So
No doubt. We live them every day and have done so for many years.
All right. Now, there's also, outside of the agreements you have, you mentioned employment agreements. So is that something where you help people like me put together agreements for tech that they hire?
Absolutely. I think that every company, large or small, should have employment agreements in place, if for no other reason than to manage the expectations between the employer and its employee, and also to make sure that the employee understands that in conjunction with the duties of that employee, the company expects them to follow the company's policies and procedures, which should be in a handbook, which is a different, similar, related area, but a different document altogether.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what most people know you for is the MSA and the SOW. So mm-hmm. the Master Service Agreement and the Statement of Work.
Right.
And I guess the first thing is we should probably define these just so that people understand what they mean. So let's define those.
Sure. So MSA means Master Service Agreement. And I don't use it to mean managed service. Managed service is simply another type of service that you might provide. MSA means Master Service Agreement, and it is the umbrella agreement that covers everything that an MSP handles and every service that the MSP provides. SOW, Statement of Work, some people call them work orders, some people call them purchase orders. I like to call them statements of work because that's what they are. They are descriptions and statements of the deliverables of the services that an MSP is going to provide.
Okay. So when I first showed you what I used to do, and 90% of what I did was based on a handshake, and then I decided, well, let's put something to paper, and I came up with a little one-page description of, here's the services I'm going to provide, here's how much you're going to pay me, and you had a little look like, oh, that's a nice little agreement. but mm-hmm. I guess what is the real difference between what some people consider contracts or agreements and the Master Service Agreement?
So the Master Service Agreement is a constitution of sorts, okay? It governs everything that you do. It is not specific to one particular service or one particular product. In fact, it is, to the greatest extent possible, service agnostic, okay? So I don't really care if you're doing BDR or RMM or break fix or cabling. I don't care if you're going to sing and dance at an hourly rate. If your client is asking you to do it, it should be covered under your Master Service Agreement. So it's not specific to a particular service.
Okay.
So that's the first thing that you want to talk about when you're thinking about differentiating, you know, these one-page or two-page contracts from what is a Master Agreement. The Master Agreement, in my perspective, should never have deliverables, should never have services. It's simply that those issues and those things don't appear in that document. They appear in statements of work.
Okay. Okay, enough with that, because that's nice to hear the definitions, but people mm-hmm. really want to hear about the questions and the in the trenches stuff. So
sure.
From the perspective of when I first came to you, I was somebody who had been doing business for a while. And a lot of people listening have been in business 10, 15, 20 years. So the question is first going to be, I've been fine without it. Why do I need this now?
Well, you know, it's sort of similar to why have insurance on your car, right? When you haven't been in an accident in 10, 15, 20 years, right. Why continue, right? Why cross at the corner and not between cars, right? The idea being that everyone is fine until they're not. And when they're not, the consequences can be incredibly high from a financial perspective, from a reputation perspective, from a personal perspective. I mean, all of these things impact your personal life as well. And so, you know, I've heard a lot of people over the years talk about the fact that, oh, I've always operated on a handshake. I've done this, I've done that. And I can tell you that most often those people get into issues and disputes that are the most intense and the most difficult because they just simply haven't set up any parameters, no rules. And so that is the that's the situation they face. Right.
I mean, I've had customers say to me when I wouldn't do something, but we're friends.
Right. We're all friends until we're not friends.
Right.
And then we are clients of lawyers. And that's what we want to avoid.
Right. All right. Now, of course, the next question is, and I'll touch on the elephant in the room. Of course, it costs money to set these up. Even my wife, when I told her how much I was going to pay for this, was kind of like, are you kidding me? And I said, honey, do you realize?
Let me talk to her. Get her on the line.
So, of course, the idea is, well, I'll just go out and Google MSA and find one and you know, kind of modify it and copy it myself. Or I know that there are consulting firms out there that'll sell the kits. You know, so I know that I've worked with you and I understand a little bit of the difference, but, you know, can you explain why somebody should not just simply go out and Google MSA?
Right. So I'll tell you this. You know, I think that Google is a great tool. When people Google agreements, it's a great tool to use to learn and give yourself an education about the general issues that are out there. All right. But to rely on those types of documents, you know, for the sake of saving a few dollars, I guess my question to you, I'll answer your question with my own question, right? Which is, how much will litigation cost you? How much time are you going to be putting in to resolve an issue that could have been resolved had you had a proper agreement in place? How much time, how much energy, how much manpower, how many resources, right? Think about that. Think about all of the contingencies and the variables that occur when you get yourself into trouble, and then turn around and say, well, was it worth saving a few dollars for this? The problem that you have with Google agreements, or that these toolkit agreements and so forth, is that they are starting points, but people use them as endpoints.
Right.
They are not endpoints. They are starting points. They need to be modified. They need to be evaluated. Sometimes they're simply inappropriate for a company. But at the very least, I don't think anybody, even the purveyors of the toolkits out there, I don't even think that they would tell you that this is something that's ready to go, ready for prime time. And then it comes down to, well, how good is the document? Very often I will get documents that have been cobbled together and then need to be reviewed. And my response is, actually, it's easier to tear this down and give you a new agreement than try to build a new one, or revise one rather, within the framework of what you've given me.
Right.
So again, I think that these resources online and in various venues are perfectly good starting points, but if you're relying on them, well, again, especially just to save a few dollars, ask yourself, you know, the next time that something happens and it's not covered by this agreement, how much time are you going to put in? How many resources will you expend? Do a compare and contrast of that. And I think you'll see, as you did, that the cost is easily justified.
Right. And it's something where the customers that we deal with need to have that framework set for them as to what we need to have set for us. I mean,
no doubt.
The expectations and stuff.
No doubt. And it also gives you a credibility.
Right.
You know, there's a credibility aspect when an MSP walks into the room and says, all right, here's our standard contract. Here are our standard statements of work and so forth. And you look like you have your act together, and it looks like it was worded by somebody who knew what he or she was talking about, as opposed to just plunking down a one-page thing that might even have grammatical errors and so forth. If they don't have confidence in the document you put in front of them, they are going to question confidence in your skill set.
Well, it's funny because when I presented an attorney my service agreement statement of work, mm-hmm. the first thing he said, oh, you're serious.
Yeah.
Because I
this just got real.
You know, presented right. documents. Right. Oh, no, you're going to sign before I do any work. Mm-hmm. So that certainly does legitimize.
Right.
Now, you made a comment about presenting, you know, our standard master service agreement, our standard service of work. And a question that I asked you when we first got started is the master service agreement something that is one document that you create for every customer individually, or is it one document for your entire business? Everybody signs the same one.
So the master agreement is just that. It is a master agreement that is intended or should be intended to cover every service that you do, service agnostic. So as I mentioned earlier, regardless of the service you're providing, BDR, RMM, VoIP, break fix, project work, I don't care. It is your constitution. Everyone signs it. And from there, you can then determine the specific service and the specific products and so forth and the specific service levels that you will provide in a particular deliverable with a particular service. But everybody, in my mind, should be signing your master service agreement before you touch anything that they do, even so-called diagnostic, right? Routine auditing to figure out what you can provide to them. Even then, you can screw something up. You can really mess something up, or at least it can be perceived that you messed something up, right?
Of course. Everything was working till you got here.
Right. So, you know, all I did was put diagnostic software on the workstation, and suddenly the client is saying three printers aren't working. Total coincidence, has nothing to do with you, but I promise you they're pointing the finger at you. And I promise you that in order to get the deal going, or at least to save reputation, you're now going to have to expend resources, maybe even money, to fix something that you didn't damage. You need to have something in writing that says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be providing you with services. Our liabilities are limited. Manage the expectations as well. And you proceed from there.
All right. So in a sense, you're now telling service providers, technicians, you know, you need to be like Sears. You need to be like the tire shops, the mechanics,
right.
Where before work is done, you have to sign something.
No doubt. It is the anecdote that hit me sometime last year and that I talk about frequently when I'm on the road speaking. When I brought my car into a repair shop, a chain repair shop, to have a flat fixed, and it was simply a question of removing a nail from the tire, and they plugged it with a plug, whatever it was, and it was an $8 or $10 repair. Nonetheless, before they would touch my car, before they did an $8 repair, I signed the same master agreement for that repair shop as I would have had to sign if they were replacing my radiator, or if they were giving me four new tires, right, or an oil change, or windshield wipers. It didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter, because they knew, and this is what I'm telling, I guess, you as well, and everyone listening, that if you touch a system, you own that system. They know if they touch my car, they own it. If I pulled away from that shop and my brakes failed, you know I'm going to blame them.
Yep,
right? I'm going to blame them because the brakes worked before you were here, right? Even though it was an $8 repair. Well, bringing it to services now, there is no such thing as an $8 repair, so we'll do it on a handshake. Things happen. There's the known knowns, right? And then there are the known unknowns. We know there's a lot of stuff that could happen. We just don't know what it is.
Right.
You need to protect yourself from them.
All right. Now, I assume that you get a lot of people that, either from the shows, they'll call you up afterwards. Oh man, I really love this idea. Okay. Price aside, they get to the point where they say, you know what? I don't think my customers are going to sign this, but I don't want to lose the customer. In that sense, how much liability then are they open to, or how do you advise people? Because what if they use your agreement for some of their customers, but not for all?
Right. So, you know, we see that a lot where we say, oh, well, we could give this agreement to this customer, but another customer that's been in existence for a few years, we don't want to raise any red flags. And again, it goes back to my argument of, well, what would you rather do? Would you rather risk raising a red flag, but potentially losing a lot of time and money when something goes wrong, or have to explain to the customer exactly why you're doing it? And I'll tell you this. What we have found, you know, I understand how clients feel when they talk about it, but what we have found that the vast majority, I'm not talking about 51%, I'm talking like 90% or more, when provided with a new agreement that has clarity and that provides credibility to the MSP, that they sign it. they understand that these days, you know, unfortunately, there's litigation, there's misunderstandings and mismanaged expectations, and they want to avoid it just as badly as the MSP does. So we have found that most clients will sign it. To the extent that a client won't sign it, or that you're scared to have a client sign it, you know, if you're just going to simply take that route, then you have a risk. You have a choice to make, really, right? You have a choice to make, a business decision. Understand that the risks are what they are. You have purposely intended to assume those risks, and make sure you have real good insurance, and make sure that you know that you're ready for it and that you're on top of it, because unfortunately, bad things happen to good MSPs, and it's almost unavoidable.
Okay. I do want to bring up that point about MSPs, but I did want to also ask the question. Some people have talked about just simply taking a master service agreement, throwing it up on the website, mm-hmm. calling it terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you sign an invoice or, you know, something like that, just refer to the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it depends on how you approach your clients with your services. I'll begin at the beginning. You need to have an MSA, right? A master service agreement. They need to accept it in some way, shape, or form. I don't generally have an issue if you're going to have the MSA on your website in a non-browsable, non-searchable area of your website, right? Okay. So web browsers aren't pulling it up and you're not funding your competitors' agreements. I don't have a problem with it, provided that, you know, you recognize the fact that A, it better be up and running all the time. B, that you don't have a version issue, right? Meaning that you're changing the document from version A to version B to version C. And if you are, you're going to have to keep track of it because you've posted it sort of on a bulletin board.
Right.
And you may not keep track or even know which version the client that signed is going to remember or agree to. The other thing is that if you're going to do it that way, you need to reference it very specifically, very clearly in your statement of work. The statement of work must say unequivocally that this is governed by that master agreement located at this site and so forth. Because if you don't, or if you sort of slip that in somewhere, a court might simply say, well, you didn't point it out. It's not clear. It's not unequivocal. And therefore, we're not going to enforce the terms of the MSA. But incorporating an MSA by reference is not a bad way to go. A lot of companies do that nowadays. You know, when you buy a phone now, you used to go to the, wherever you go, to a local store, and you'd sign contracts after contract after contract. And now you just sign like a little pad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it says this incorporates those terms of service that are located here or that will be mailed to you later. I'm okay with it as long as it's done properly.
Right. As long as it's not something where you change it after the fact, because I do, and we're going to go out of order here, and I'm not going to try to name the person specifically, but a managed service provider that we've referenced on our show got in trouble about a year or so ago for a dispute, in a sense, that ended the contract, but he turned off services for a client because they had not paid. They said, no, we were done with our contract and we were going with somebody else. You should not have turned off our services. And then the person produced another contract that was different from what the customer produced.
Version problem.
Right.
Yes. Versioning is a serious problem in the industry. Companies, and this goes back to why I began by saying that an MSA is your constitution and should not change. It should never change. We talk about how to make changes or modifications if necessary, but generally speaking, your MSA should be your document that goes from point A to point Z, you know, year one to year whenever. And if you're going to change it, it should be very rare. It should be very infrequent. And it should generally be because either the law has changed or your business environment has changed so dramatically that it's now time to change your MSA. I would say that a good MSA, if it's well written, should probably be reviewed once every 4 to 6 years, in that range. Maybe 3 to 5, 4 to 6, in that range.
Right.
mostly because of legal changes, not so much of business changes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So since we just went into story time, I guess, without getting too in-depth or naming names, are there any stories that you can share, you know, where having an MSA in place really saves somebody?
Sure, sure. Well, I'll tell you, you know, and it really depends on what the MSA says, right? And it's not so much the legal that we find that saves people, mm-hmm. okay? Legal's important. It's important to limit your liability, and you have all those all capital letters in the paragraphs and okay.
fine print.
Yeah, the fine print. Okay. That's not really what has saved people in my experience. What has saved them would be the sections of a well-written MSA that talk about the realities of the relationship between the MSP or the OEM or the VAR, whatever it is, and its client. The realities, what I call the nuances of the relationship. A good MSA will address those. Like, for example, and I just had this, as unusual as it was the first time I had it, but our MSA covered it. We had a client that was located in a fairly remote area of Minnesota. And so they are one of just a handful, if there are even that many MSPs out there. And one of their technicians is a woman. And that's relevant to this story, that that it was a woman technician. And when they would send the technician out to a particular client, she was actually being harassed. Believe it, she was being harassed. And you know, what to do? What do you do? So you have there aren't that many technicians that they could choose from because right. they're in this fairly remote. The client isn't really breaking the agreement, right? Because they're paying for a service.
Right.
You know, nowhere in it does it say there's a no harassment policy, or at least there was in the agreement we had written for them. So I think, for example, in this particular case, you know, the employer is in a very sticky situation because if he doesn't do something, there's a workplace harassment issue that's arising. If he did something, he risked losing the client and at least losing reputation and walking away over mismanaged relationship. So what I said was, well, look in your agreement. It actually says in there that if you do not, if the client does not provide an environment that is either safe or suitable, or if they behave in a way that makes it unreasonable for you to provide your service to that client, you have the right to terminate the service. And I said, I would suggest that you call the client and say, listen, you know, control your people. It's not right. It's not fair. We, you know, and while we don't want to terminate, we have the ability to look in your contract. And you know what? The client turned around and said, well, we better control our people here because they could terminate. That was the result of an MSA. He'd say, wow, harassment, that's covered under an MSA? Yeah. Yeah, it should be. It should be. Similar stories would be where your MSP advises a client to do something and they don't. And as a result, bad things happen. We've had a situation where an MSP has told a client, listen, replace a server. You have to replace the server because if you don't replace the server, data on that server will eventually be lost. Client says what all clients say, right? Not in the budget.
Well, not in the budget or, well, you're going to take care of it.
Right. In this case, that was what they said. They said both of them. You're going to, you know what? It's not in the budget. You just keep fixing it. Mm-hmm. You just keep fixing it and remediate. That's what your contract says. We're going to remediate. Yep. Remediate. We'll deal with this in the next fiscal quarter, fiscal year, whatever it is. What happened, of course, data was lost. The server went down. And then the finger pointing began, right? The finger pointing began. So who's right? Well, you know, at $400-$500 an hour, lawyers will argue all day long who's right, right? But you don't have that kind of money. Most people don't have that kind of money just to argue the point. So what did the MSP consider doing? Considered trying to recover the data. Now think about the time and the money that goes into that, right? And then once they take on that responsibility, have they now established a duty to do this, right? All kinds of questions, all because their MSA, before they came to us, their MSA didn't have something in there that simply said, we're going to give you advice. We're going to give you some directions. You need to listen to our advice. You need to take our directions. If you don't, and something bad happens, whatever that something is, right? It's on you, client. It's not covered under a statement of work. It's not covered under this agreement. And if we are able to fix it, never just assume you're going to be able to fix it. If we are, it's going to be pursuant to another statement of work, maybe by the billable hour. So all these issues can be avoided just by having something in there that says, we're going to give you advice. You need to take it. Really, just two or three sentences saves thousands of dollars.
Absolutely.
And there are tons of stories like that out there.
Well, we talk about it all the time where, you know, we advise customers to have a backup and not just a local backup, have a cloud backup or offsite backup. And it's, well, it's, you know, I can't afford that or whatever. And then inevitably something happens. Even if one file is lost,
right,
the customer's having a fit.
That's right. Because you don't know what that file is, right? That's the one file they need.
Right.
And then the question is, who's responsible for that? Well, you told them to do it, but nowhere in their contract would, I don't know, not yours per se, but people who are listening to this.
Mine has it now.
So. Now it does. That's right, because we did it. But nowhere in the contracts that most MSPs are using, nowhere does it say that they have to take your advice. It's amazing to me. It's a very, you know, as an MSP, you take on amazing responsibility. You are accessing data. You are manipulating a client system. You are basically running their entire, the internal organs of their business. And yet most MSPs out there don't have an agreement that says, if we tell you to do something, you need to do it. You need to do it. They're scared. They don't want to make these suggestions to clients and all, you know, and my response is always, well, balance. You're scared to talk to them. How scared will you be to plunk down a retainer agreement for lawyers to argue over who should have done what? You know, once you do it that way, you see the choice is clear.
Well, most get stuck with that stage fright of, I don't want to lose the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I need to appease them instead of doing what's right.
Most of the time, in fact, I can't think off the top of my head of any, but I would say at least very confidently, most of the time, the client that is unapproachable or the client that doesn't sign an agreement is the best client that you've ever fired. It's the best client that you've ever refused to take on, because those are the clients that will cause the issues time and time again. Mm. That's what we see.
Yeah. So that kind of, what's been popping in the back of my head is the whole idea of a difficult client. And one of the reasons where I finally decided to pull the trigger is I had a firm where we take care of their servers and their desktops. They have software that's managed by a third-party vendor, not us. We do their backups, but we don't maintain their system. And they had a day where that system didn't work. And they could not get in touch with their vendor, their tech guru, to fix it. And of course, Marvin, well, can't you take care of this for us? Now, I had a little bit of experience, and I said, this is what I can do, and this is what I'm willing to do. I did it. It did not fix the issue. So they were still down. So after the other tech came in, got everything up and running, of course, one of the lines that came out was, well, who can we sue for that lost day of business? And luckily, I was able to tell them, well, I told you that's not my responsibility. And they understood that. They listened to it. But there's going to be cases where they're not going to care.
No doubt.
And so obviously having something in the agreement or statement of work saying that, you know, we're responsible for this, but we are not responsible for that.
Right. Right. You bring up a great point, which is in your statement of work, which is where your services and your deliverables are listed. Okay. You not only want to say what is covered, but you want to make it very clear that if it isn't listed, then it's simply out of scope. It's not covered. And we find that a lot of service providers suffer from what you just described as scope creep, right? Which is, oh, well, you did this. Couldn't you just do that? And right? And
while you're here.
Of course, while you're here. And of course, in the provider's zeal to satisfy the customer, to show that they really need you, right? Or that they that you want to show how good you are, right? You say, oh, let me take a whack at this. Let me see what's going on. But that creates a scope creep problem that will come back to haunt you. Again, going back to my car example, they know if they touch my car, they own it. And I told you earlier, if you touch a system, you own it. Well, if you're going to, quote, take a whack at something, you now own whatever you're whacking, okay? You own that thing. And if something bad goes wrong, I promise you, they are not going to turn around and say, oh, don't worry, I know you were just doing us a favor. No. Now they're going to turn around and say, well, you broke it. Now it's really broken. Now you really have to help us. And here we go. We're in the area of, you know, no rules, no scope of work, what to do. Okay. So avoid scope creep at all costs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You just brought up something, and we haven't talked about it in our meetings, and I don't know if this is something you cover. Insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do take a whack at something and break it, mm-hmm. now I've got general liability insurance. Mm-hmm. I've got E&O insurance. Mm-hmm. I've got auto insurance for hired employees. Mm-hmm. I know that my insurance will cover if I'm transporting equipment from one place to another.
Right.
I have that in my insurance policy.
Right.
I know that I've got some things in there if certain things break, but I don't, I'll be honest, I probably haven't read it in deep to know. But
right.
in terms of that, you know, having the agreement, but do you guys also advise on the insurance to have in the event of?
So my advice is that every MSP should have insurance, and you're right, general liability, E&O, all of those things are very important. I would add into that now cybersecurity, some sort of cybersecurity, cyber theft type insurance in the event that you have a rogue employee that goes and decides to steal something or unintentionally leaves a laptop with your client's data sitting somewhere, right? So cybersecurity and breach of confidentiality insurance and so all that type of thing is very important. And we review those routinely to from an attorney's perspective to tell our clients what is covered and what is not going to be covered. However, the specific policies and so forth, you really need to find a good insurance agent that deals in this area. That doesn't just deal with, for example, business continuity and corporate and so forth, which is all important because each and every one of you guys should be companies. But there are, like I said earlier, nuances. There are unique things in the MSP client relationship, like the cybersecurity issue, that need to be addressed and that can be addressed with the proper insurance broker. So long-winded way of saying we review these policies and we right. could tell you what's covered. But to actually get the coverage and see what's out there, you need to find a good broker.
Well, I can tell you that was difficult for us. Mm-hmm. I think it took us like 6 months to find somebody that could do all of that for us yeah. and understand the tech language.
Right. Because yeah, there are a few. And we found a few located sporadically throughout the U.S. But you're right. It is, it's becoming increasingly easier, but it's still not easy to find these people. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we've talked a good bit here. I think we've done a good job of explaining the MSA, Master Service Agreement, Statement of Work, how all that applies, why you should have one, and if you do, how to word things properly, because that, again, is something huge. I know that we talked about earlier, customers, we live in a Google world where customers will do everything they can not to call.
Mm-hmm.
If we can fix it ourselves, we don't want to call you.
Right.
So we'll move this piece of equipment. We'll install this ourselves. And I right. know that that's something I asked you about. How do I phrase this properly
right.
to prevent customers from doing it themselves?
Right. It's a problem. And you see it in the MSP world. We see it in the legal world, right? With people Googling documents and so forth because they either don't want to incur the time or the costs in bringing in the professional to do it. And you know, candidly, I think I funded my kids' college education on clients that have done exactly that have gone and Googled it or taken these templates and these tools these toolkit things and then just run with them and said, I didn't want to incur the expense. You're going to incur the expense later on. It'll be double or triple what you think it should have been because now it's a situation. Now it's a thing, right? I'll tell you this. My advice is if you're going to do it, then you do it right. You don't, for example, bring in an MSP to monitor and manage all of your equipment, all of your servers and so forth. But then you start adding a few things because, you know what, I don't want to bother. Well, then why are you bothering having an MSP at all, right? Why are we monitoring? Why are we managing? You know, if you're going to take on something that exposes your network because you don't want to call, you know, your provider, well, you know, now you might have exposed them to some sort of virus or malware or ransomware. And if that happens, it's going to cost double, triple, right? Quadruple. Right.
Yep.
Same with the legal. If you're going to bring in a law firm to help you with your company, to help you with your employment agreements, your corporate agreements, your mergers, your acquisitions, your master agreements and so forth, well, then, you know, you go all the way. You don't leave the last mile or the last quarter mile to a Google search or a Yahoo search. You continue along with the professional because in the long run, it brings you credibility and it saves you money. That applies equally to my business as it does to yours, Marvin.
All right. And I can attest to that because we, like I said, we sat down and had a meeting and there are blue and red lines all over my previous agreement that we started with. So it's going to pay and everybody should have one. So Bradley, for people that are listening here and may want to get in touch with you, where would you like them to go?
Sure. So they could start by going to the website. www.bradleygross.com, BradleyGross.com, or they can email me, brad@bradleygross.com, for more information. And I will be glad to talk to anyone who has questions about it who might be listening to this podcast. I think that at the end of the day, when you're really sitting back and thinking about what you need to do and, you know, where you want to go with your agreements, with your corporate structures, with all of the underlying things that comprise your company, your MSP, your service provision company. I think you need to have a lot of trust and a lot of faith in who you're calling. And I would just hope that listening to this, that they have heard that in me, and I really appreciate you giving us the opportunity to talk about these issues.
All right, Brad, well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I do want to say that even though I had heard of Brad for quite some time, I've seen him out on the circuit. It was actually a couple of listeners that sent me an email saying, hey, you need to do a podcast with Bradley. And I'm like, I know Bradley. So
I know that guy.
So it worked out great, and I appreciate the time that you took here. And I certainly will keep pushing people your way.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back after these messages to close out the show.
Hi, I'm Stephanie from AppRiver. Microsoft 365 includes the productivity of Office 365, as well as an enhanced Windows 10 subscription. But the real Microsoft 365 strength is in the security and management advantages that it brings to business. Microsoft 365 focuses on security by protecting company data and keeping employees secure and productive, regardless of the device or access point. So whether your users are using their workstation, personal smartphone, tablet, or even their home computer, the security follows the login and not the device. Microsoft is truly moving identity management from the device to the cloud. By simplifying the management of company assets, logins, and deployments, Microsoft 365 is making IT professionals look good. With a consolidated interface and simplified online tools to configure countless aspects of business management, Microsoft 365 includes many configuration and security advantages that you probably haven't even considered yet. Worried about the complexity? Don't be. With AppRiver, we've got the Office experts who know how to make Microsoft 365 seamless. In fact, we've been supporting Office 365 with 24/7 phenomenal care support since it was first introduced. So if you're considering Microsoft 365, make the easy choice and get started today with AppRiver. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed that. I do want to make a quick point here. So Brad and I have spent hours reviewing and correcting the agreements that I had in place before I started talking to him, and just simply said, the way that Brad was talking to me in this interview, that's the way Brad is all the time. He is knowledgeable about this topic. He is passionate about this topic, and he will definitely guide you in the way that you should go if you give him and his office a call. Let's face it, there is no real warm and fuzzy way to do agreements, but they're important. We didn't even talk about some of these weird specifics in, you know, how you should word your agreements, you know, things about, you know, when you write in that you monitor devices 24/7, you know, there really should be a phrase in there that says, while you may monitor 24/7, you may only manage during business hours, because you're not going to wake up at 2 a.m. to manage a device unless you're really truly providing a 24/7 knock service. I know many of you listeners out there, you don't have a knock. I don't have a knock and probably never will. So we all know that everything ends and the transition may not be easy. I say that because, as many of you know, the reason that I actually came to Brad was not just that one story about the attorney who says, who am I going to sue, but also because I parted ways with a customer after 18 years, and at the time, I did not have a master service agreement or any real contract with them in place. It was really a handshake deal 18 years ago. Now, I was lucky. Everything went well. The transition took 6 weeks, and it was probably one of the most nerve-wracking periods in my career, only because it could have turned south at any given time. But it went great. I got paid. Everything went smooth. All I can say is that next time my business and a customer parts ways, we are going to know exactly what to expect. So just another way to say I'm happy to have Brad in my own backyard here in Florida. And for those of you that want to contact him, I will have all of his contact information in the show note. Now, if you need anything related to Office 365, be sure to check out my friends over at AppRiver. Head over to appriver.com/podnutspro. If you call, be sure to ask for my rep, Robin, also known as Sunshine. Let her know that Marvin from Podnuts Pro told you to call. She'll take real good care of you. They are fantastic. I would like to thank Door to Door Geek and the Podnuts Network for providing this platform for us. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for the show, send me an email. Send it to marvin@podnuts.com. I will answer. You can also reach out to us on the Twitter. We have the handle @PodnutsPro. And folks, I will be back next week with my good friend Matt Rainey, and we will have some great, great stories for you. I wish you all a great week in tech, and until next time, holla.